it is really enough to make it go crazy. Yeah, I'm a little crazy. Larry's a little crazy. We're all a little crazy. But that's part of, you know, one of the things is when we get on the bandstand, for everybody, for the girls lining up, for the, you know, just the money it costs us to do this, you know, there's a real joy and a real, we have arrived, we made it, we're here. And none of this is taken for granted, you know, that we are, can do this.
How was Makeke formed? How did you guys put together these group of women?
Well, I was in Cuba, and I was with what's called a jazz safari. Now, our jazz radio station, 24-hour station, is called Jazz FM 91. And they do these safaris, they're called. They do one to England, and one to Italy, and they do one to Cuba.
This is an actual safari.
Yeah, we call it safari. And what happens is that people donate to the station, and a substantial donation of something like $2,500. They get a tax receipt. This is during their fundraising for the station. They get this trip, 1 week trip to Cuba, which entails musicians from Cuba and a few Canadian musicians, and we stage an actual jazz festival. We don't call it a festival, we call it a jazz event. It's like a private party in one of the hotels in Veradero. So what happened was I met this young singer, and I had her, I just met her in the lobby. And I had set up a jam session in the cigar lounge in one of the hotels. And so there was a number of people there and a number of well-known jazz artists from Havana. So I ran into Daimi Arocena in the lobby, and we started up conversations. She said she was a singer, and I said, come to the jam session. So she came to the jam session. She was like 17, just turning 18 at the time. And she was very good. Like, she sang like way beyond her years. So afterwards, I think the following month, I was artistic director of an event that's called Sistering, which is they raise money for women at risk with their children and family. And they're a wonderful organization. And so I've been doing this show for some time, and I'm the musical director of it. So anyway, I convinced them to hire Daimi, because there's a huge Spanish-speaking community in Toronto, and I thought it was quite important maybe to have somebody who would sing in Spanish to reach out to that, and they went for it. So she came, and she did like three songs. All the women do three songs, and there's a couple of women comedians and stuff, and she brought the house down. There was some really seasoned singers in that show that are very known in Canada, and they were like, whoa, who is this young lady? So after that, I started to think about, well, she's just now built an audience, starting to build an audience in Toronto, you know, people that never knew her before. And that's when Larry and I got the idea, because I've been working in Cuba in a number of the conservatories. There's 25 conservatories in Cuba. Five of them are in Havana. And we're talking about some of the schools have up to like 500 students enrolled. And these students come from all over the countryside, and they audition to get free musical education at these institutes. 65-70% of the students are women. And I would go, like, I would be at a jam session or someplace, and they'd be sitting on the sidelines, and they would never engage in the jam session. They'd be happy to watch their boyfriends play, and they'd never bring their instruments. And if they did, they would just, like, you know, I'd be like, come on, come up and play. No, no, don't make me, I don't want to go. And then many of them just stopped when they graduated. You know, they had 15 years of training, musical training. That's when they start them at the age of 8. So by the time they're 16, 17, they're seasoned professionals. They're so good. And then they just stop playing. So,
because of what, lack of opportunity, or they just took the
okay,
pressure?
First of all, lack of opportunity. And lack of opportunity meaning even the guys are getting a lack of opportunity. You can't just go say, I'm going to go play at that cafe bistro over there, or I'm going to go play at that theater, you know, like we can. You have to go through these levels of government. You have to ask the Institute of Music. You have to ask the Minister of Culture. You have to ask permission. So when you engage in doing that, and there's all these guys, sorry, girlfriend, you can wait, because, you know, it's pretty macho there. So you got the combination of lack of opportunities for everybody. So the women are sort of on a lower level, and takes a very strong woman like a Yissy on drums here, who was like, I'm going to go out there and play. Now, she's one of the more the more seasoned ones, because her dad is a professional musician, but still it's been really hard, really, really hard for her too. Anyhow, so got this idea to say, well, we got to, maybe this is now the time to try and see if I can do something for some of these women, because I'd like to see more women out there playing. So I talked to Dimey, and I brought her back up to Canada, and we started to kind of work on some music. And then I went back to Cuba with Dimey and Larry, and I started checking out the various women that I thought were possibilities. And that's how we put together the group. You know, I just saw the personality thing was very, very important. And of course, the fact that they want to play jazz, because this is not a show band. The most important thing is, you know, we're improvising, we're trying to challenge each other. I'm trying to encourage the other girls to write for the group, and everybody is now writing material. And so they have to have that spirit to really want to be jazz musicians, even though we're still working strongly in the context of Cuban musical forms and rhythms.
The Cuban connection for you, you seem to have found a real niche. It seems to speak to you in a certain kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
How does it speak to you?
You know what? Well, I think it's my background being pretty steeped in jazz. You know, I got into jazz because of Coltrane and Farrell Saunders and Rawson Roland Kirk and Don Pullen and Mingus and, you know, Sam Rivers and Joe Henderson. I came at it from Farrell Saunders and Coltrane, and then discovered Charlie Parker. I heard about Coltrane before Charlie Parker. And as I started to, you know, listen more and more to jazz and the different, you know, styles of the music, then I got, you know, going backwards, I discovered Charlie Parker and Bud Powell. I got interested hearing about Barry Harris, who taught in New York, and Larry and I started taking the bus to New York City to study at Jazz Forum. Mark Morganelli set up these jazz workshops with Barry Harris. So I came at it, you know, from that.
You mean from Toronto?
Bus to New York and stay for the weekend. And those were brutal. You know, we would get in at like 10 o'clock at night and go directly to Barry Harris's class. And he was relentless. He'd be going at 2 and 3 in the morning, you know, with his classes. They're unbelievable. I mean, he's something else. So, you know, I still, like, really, really love that music, and that's my foundation. So when I got into Cuban music, it was purely accidental. When I going to Mexico, getting sick every time I went to Mexico, we Canadians do, you know, and this is like 1981, 82, Cuba became a destination place for Canadians to go. So it was a cheap trip. I went there for a week. It was like $300 and something. It was hotel, 3 meals a day, airplane, and I was like, what the hell, let's go. And so the moment I got there, there was music everywhere. And one of the first things, musics I heard, was the Afro-Cuban folkloric music. And I, you know, for me, when I heard that music, the chants and the drumming, I right away heard, I heard Africa Brass, I heard Coltrane, I heard Farrell Saunders, I heard these kind of, that whole period of music, which was, you know, came out of the Black musical experience. And that music just spoke to me, even though, you know, my background and everything, I felt it. And I heard the connection between those two musics. So that's what I started listening to, was these Afro-Cuban and the music of the Orishas. And then I met Mercedes Valdez and Guillermo Barreto, and they started introducing Larry and I to other people that were doing other musical things, were maybe coming more from something else. And then, jumping ahead, when we made our film in the year 2000, Spirits of Havana, I traveled across the whole country, and I started then hearing the regional, not only the regional sounds of each province, but the historical, like, I mean, there's a whole Cuban classical part of music there, too. It's just like jazz, right? I mean, it's not just one thing. There's, like, many things. You get a tree, and it just goes like this. And so you got all this music that's influenced from Europe, and then you got this influence by Haiti, and this music that's influenced from tribes, areas of Africa. Like, I mean, what happened in Cuba was, like, you know, they had these cabildos, and each one had their own particular religion and music. And so those things have been preserved in Cuba. So it's just endless.